You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Locked on Cavs. I'm your host, Chris Manning, and this is your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Today's show is a conversation with Ben Dole, the host of Locked on Women's Basketball, a writer at places like High Post Hoops and the B-Ball Writers, about the Cavs' new head coach, their new assistant coach. That is going to be Lindsay Gottlieb, the former coach at the University of California women's basketball, very successful there, a very, very great head coach, and I think she continues to be a really interesting hire. There's a lot of good information out there about this. Joe Varden wrote about it. You can find a link in the show notes here to Varden's article, as well as an interview that we had. We saw Scott Van Pelt do over the weekend with Lindy Gottlieb on SportsCenter, so that was pretty cool to see her get out there and speak to Scott Van Pelt for about 4 minutes on SportsCenter, a big national profile. But that's today's show. This week will have a lot of draft content. So tomorrow, Jackson Frank from The Step Back and The Athletic will be on to talk about the Cavs and team building and where the Cavs are at right now. We're going to have a two-parter with Trevor Magnani in the lead-up to the draft. And then Friday, Jordan Zerm is going to be on with me to break down everything. So we have a really great week of guests. But wanted to start with Lindsay Gottlieb and with Ben Dole to talk about what is a monumental hire for the Cavs. I think a really interesting hire. And Ben is, I think, frankly, one of the best people covering the women's game right now. And he does a great job on Locked On Women's Basketball, so be sure to check that out. If you aren't already, I would also highly recommend checking out what Locked On Raptors is doing in the wake of the final. Sean Woodley is crushing it over there. He's got a new book out as well with Alex Wong, so please go check that out. The Locked On NBA Mock Draft is underway, so check that out as well. And across the network, all teams are covering the draft. We have a ton of stuff really getting on there. It's going to be really, really fun, and I think you're going to enjoy everything we're doing right now. Just a reminder, though, that the Locked On NBA Mock is underway. The local experts in every draft room are drafting. Jeremy Wu of SI.com is there with the player breakdowns. You have Josh Lloyd there with the fantasy basketball breakdowns as well. It's all in Locked On NBA. Subscribe to that on Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you're driving to work or to work or around town, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play Locked On Cavs, and we'll be right there with you for the drive. So check that out. Check out the Locked On NBA Mock Draft. I did a lot of, I think, realistic-ish stuff. That was my premise on this, and so I think you'll enjoy it. There's a whole bunch there. That obviously, the AD trade changes a lot of this, and I think for the Cavs, the way it impacts them is, you know, you wonder if they get outbid in terms of having the Hawks maybe trade up to 4 instead of 5 now, but it's going to be an interesting week, a very interesting week for the Cavs on a whole bunch of fronts. Again, whole big week of shows with Trevor Magnani, Jordan Zerm, Jackson Frank joining the show. But first up, Ben Dole talking about Lindsay Gottlieb. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Joining me now is the host of Locked On Women's Basketball. He's also a writer at High Post Hoops, which is a great women's basketball site in the Fan Site Network, the Basketball Writers, and the B-Ball Index. It's Ben Dole. Ben, how's it going?
Well, thanks for having me on.
No, I appreciate it. So I want to start with Lindsay Gottlieb, with her getting hired by the Cavs. For you, as someone who follows the women's game in detail and was sort of aware of her position as the head coach of Cal and what she'd accomplished there, did this news that she was moving to the NBA to work under John Beilein from a position where she was in charge, did that surprise you in a way that it seemed to surprise most everyone on the NBA side of this?
Well, I think on a very, just like on a pure basketball level, if you're just like looking at Cal, you know, of course, like, everyone brings up that it's a prolific academic institution. Of course, it's in a great conference and whatnot, but they were in a position where they're gonna have to reload. So like, if you really like zoom in and just look at it like that, like this timing makes a lot of sense for Lindsey to get a chance to do something like this. But upon hearing about it, I just couldn't help but first think of what Muffin McGraw said so eloquently at the Final Four, that, you know, we want to get to the point where this isn't surprising and that this is just normal. But first, something that just had to happen. And I think that was just kind of the first thing that I thought of.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's what I think we're all sort of hoping for, is that something like this hire will just be a normal, you know, another kind of coaching hire, maybe notable because the coach in question is a college head coach that was very successful. Not that it's, you know, that she's a woman. We need to get to a point where that's just normal. But to run through her resume, if people aren't fully aware and haven't followed her career, she played at Brown for 4 years. She's been a coach since 1999. First at Syracuse as an assistant, New Hampshire as an assistant, Richmond as an assistant, Cal as an assistant, then was the associate head coach at Cal for a season, then was the head coach at UC Santa Barbara, and then took over Cal in 2011. She's made the Final Four. She's been the Pac Coach of the Year. She's accomplished basically everything except really winning a national title at Cal. So before we get into what she's going to kind of bring as a coach and what her sort of tendencies are and things, what is her legacy as a college basketball coach at Cal?
Well, I think and long before the news of this broke, was that I think that there was a common thread in anyone that you ever saw speak about Lindsey. And I'm coming at this as, you know, I obviously haven't been covering the game forever. I'm not old enough to have even done that, but it was plain as day to see that how respected Lindsey is just among her coaching peers and just by the women's college basketball game at large. The way you saw her players that are now in the WNBA, the way they spoke about her so glowingly, just about, and not even the basketball stuff, just the relationship with her. And I think that is something, and that's something that's going to carry, because now you have these players that are going on into the world, and that kind of carries as people point back to her and what she gave them, and just to have, and it does matter that you had that moment of making it to a Final Four to get to the biggest stage. Obviously that is now something that, you know, whoever steps into that job now, that's going to be the whole goal, is just to try to get back there in a Pac-12 conference that has really taken off in the last couple of years.
When you look at her as someone that, you know, leaves Cal, I was talking to some other people, you know, that cover the women's game about this as well. They thought maybe if she was going to leave, it might have been to take over another a high profile job or just move up that ladder as opposed to this. I know you haven't been covering this forever, obviously, but was that like to you like a more just what you might have been more expected as opposed to her doing this? And it, based on what she said, it seems like this came about very like unexpected for her too. Like when Kobe Altman, the Cavs GM, reached out to her, it was he thought she was just trying to pick her brain about how to get women more involved in the game, not to hire her, you know, as an assistant under John Beilein, who, as far as we know, like they didn't really have like they maybe had met before, but weren't exactly, you know, like connected via a coaching tree or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of one of those things where you could say that, but I think that just where Cal is, just as an academic institution, the conference, it's not as if this is like a low major school or even a mid major. So I don't know that you could say that there are just going to be a ton of these amazing high profile jobs that were going to come available. Obviously Tennessee did after this past season, and that obviously would be one of the, you know, the biggest jobs in the sport. But I don't know that there were like so many jobs that you would say there's this abundance of things that you'd just sit on, because it's just one of those things where, you know, a good opportunity comes along and you just kind of have to take it. And again, it's just like, I mean, the Pac-12 is in a really good spot right now, and Cal is going to have to do some serious reloading with what they lost. But all things considered, to be in the Bay Area, to have proximity to an NBA team where she had some good relationships, and to be in the Pac-12 and to be somebody that has trimmed out some WNBA players. I mean, I don't think it was even really a job where you would have wanted to say, like, I can't wait to get out of here. I can't wait to take a step up.
So what is her, what is she going to bring as a coach in terms of X's and O's, in terms of her style, in terms of her, what are her expertise is in basketball? What is she going to bring to her job on the Cavs staff?
Yeah, that's tough from the outside. I mean, that's like words that are getting tossed around at a player development and, you know, culture driver, I think was one of the things that came out from the Cavs. I mean, like from an X's and O's standpoint, I don't know. That's so tough to say because the games are just so different. With college, you're playing to the talent that you have. And until Christina Nigue came along, who was just drafted in the first round of the WNBA draft, you know, I think you would have pointed to the point guards that they had put out in Brittany Point and Lazy Clarendon that are now pros. And that'd be an easy thing to point with. But if Lindsay got a job 4 years from now and she had another great post player, you know, we might be talking about her as this post whisperer. So I mean, I don't know what it's, I mean, that all just comes down to, you know, how John Beilein wants to divvy things up. But, you know, Lindsay's coached for a long time. She's run her own program. As far as an X's and O's thing, I mean, I think it's just going to come down to just how they want to show that up. And, you know, the player development piece, I think that could be very real. And just somebody who has a strong background with that, especially for a team that isn't very good right now and just needs to kind of develop their young players from that aspect, even before getting to the on-court stuff.
Were there through lines on her Cal teams of things that they did well? Like when you look at Beilein, I think, like when you look at how, in, you know, again, certainly different games and everything like that, but the way you think he's going to translate, it's that he has an offense that is going to come in and sort of work for the NBA, maybe even better because there's more spacing. That's, I think, the logic the Cavs are applying. Is there something with Gottlieb that with what she, like, was there just something about her Cal teams that even if the personnel was different and even if there are some, you know, slight adjustments to fit that personnel, those personnel changes and the churn of recruiting, was there like a through line of some kind on for her that kind of was distinctive about her Cal teams over these last couple of years?
I think the through line looking at Cal is just having gone through year after year after year of having to kind of, they have some years where they're better than this, but having to go through that year after year of, okay, we're seen as this team that's probably like in a pretty crowded middle, especially like they were this past year in the Pac-12. So we have to win a lot of close games and we just have to win every game that we're supposed to if we're going to get a large bid and get in the NCAA tournament. And they made the tournament 7 times. And obviously, like I said, like some of those years, they were much better than a middle of the pack Pac-12 team. But as a team like Oregon and obviously Stanford, who's there year after year, as those teams really just have risen the level of the league so much, I think the through line is just like, you know, on paper, especially the last couple of years, Cal didn't have, they weren't going to have the most talent, but they still performed well enough to be in close games and to compete with the top teams. Some of the top teams in the conference that were also some of the top teams in the country.
When you think about player development, and that's something the Cavs, I think, are really prioritizing. I think they wouldn't have hired a coach that they didn't think could help in that regard. Is there a player or players that you've seen the last couple of years in Cal that kind of showcase what she has done, what she can do as a coach to bring the best out of her players, be it a guard, be it a wing, whatever? Is there someone or multiple players that have stood out in that regard the last couple of seasons?
Well, I think that would be their post player, Christina Nigue, who was taken in the first round by the Connecticut Sun. She was a player who, from the moment she stepped on a campus, you know, everybody was already saying that she's just got these unbelievable physical tools. She's tremendously gifted. You know, she's long. She's got the body for the pro game. And up until this past season, she wasn't exactly a player that you're talking about. And, you know, the thing with the WNBA is, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed at least 3 years, and it's usually a full 4, of a look at prospects before they hit the pros. So you have a long time to watch these players, which is completely opposite of the men's game. But with Christine going into this year, the thing was, okay, like, does she dominate games all the time? Does she have the attitude? Can she dominate on the glass and not just score? And then Christine came out this season, and she did that for the whole season. And that was something that Christine even talked to throughout the season, often when given the chance. And she really pointed to Lindsay being just this transformative figure in her life and really helping her reach that point as a person to understand how she could do something like that. And I think that's obviously, like, you know, squeezing every last drop out of what you can be is something that the Cavs would be very interested in.
The last thing before we turn a bit to the WNBA, if you could, we haven't heard from her. Like, she had a conference call with some media, I believe on Wednesday, but we haven't heard from her explicitly. We haven't heard from Kobe Altman or John Beilein in anything other than sort of the prepared statement you get in a press release. I don't really tell you that much, frankly. If you could ask the Cavs or her a question, just sort of about what her role is going to be, or sort of what her fit is going to be in all this, what would you, is there something about this you just would like to know? Because I think there's just a lot of interesting questions, I think, that can kind of come from this, considering it is the first female college coach to transition to the league, and also just how it seems like it sort of came about in terms of the Cavs just looking to assemble a diverse group of basketball minds more than anything else.
They kind of touched on this on the statement. I think the question would be just that what drew you to Lindsay, and then what of the things that she said, what really sold you, because to take this and to zoom out with it, you know, I think that's the thing that the basketball community at large needs to know. You know, what should NBA teams be looking for if they're looking at college coaches in the women's college game? What qualities that Lindsay has? You know, there are obviously plenty of coaches that would be more than qualified to enter into the NBA in some capacity as well. So what drew them to her, and what things did they learn about her that, frankly, like, are probably assumed about men's coaches anywhere in the NBA and at the college level, that you know, women coaches probably just don't get the benefit of the doubt, or people just won't assume that they have those certain qualities.
I think for me, the one thing I would ask in addition to that, which I think is fair, is I would just to hear her verbalize it in a way that's not prepared in the way the statement is, I would just like to know, like, what the challenges of this that she's most looking forward to getting into. Because I know, like, with Beilein, and the reason I sort of think the way that I think they are sort of going to mesh in an interesting way is that Beilein is coming into this, like, this is his last basketball kind of thing. Like, this is his last sort of job, is sort of, I think, his hope for this. He's 66. She's 41. She's very young. She could be coaching for another 3 decades, and that wouldn't be a blink. So is this, you know, step one to becoming an NBA head coach? Is this to just get some diverse experience and do something else? Like, I just want to know, like, what her sort of, what the, at this moment, obviously the opportunity presents itself and you have to jump on it, but also, like, what the long-term sort of challenge that she's kind of on here. I think that would just be an interesting question. And it's, you know, it's not necessarily, again, something that we might always ask a men's coach, but I think because we just haven't, I just would like to hear what she has to say to that, because the prepared statement didn't really offer me that much.
Yeah, no, that's a great point as well.
All right, so last thing, Ben, you obviously cover the WNBA. You host Locked On Women's Basketball. For people that maybe want to hop in and watch the WNBA this year and hop in right now as the season's still kind of early on, what are some of the big storylines people can hop right into and perhaps follow along with right now?
Well, the big thing I think going on right now is you have 6 title contenders among the 12 teams, and 4 of them are waiting on superstar level players to get back into form. You have Candace Parker in LA, who has been out with a preseason hamstring injury. You have Angel McCautry with the Atlanta Dream, who tore ACL late last season, and they almost still came minutes away in a game 5 in the semis of getting to the finals even without her. You have the Phoenix Mercury, who are playing out Diana Taurasi, who had preseason back surgery, going into her age 37 season, but she was also coming off of one of the best seasons of her career. And then you have the Las Vegas Aces, who acquired Liz Cambage and are kind of working her back into a bigger minutes load with some Achilles tendonitis that she had been dealing with. And that's the big story right now, is just how many wins can those teams bank without them to be in the best position possible, because the great thing about this league is it's a 34-game season, so every game matters so much. And with the playoff format, only two teams get a guarantee into the semifinals. Everybody else has to play at least one single elimination game. So, you know, in a way, it's a crapshoot, and the best team won't necessarily even make it to the finals. But, you know, with and obviously a lot of people hope this gets changed as soon as possible, but the way it is now, you just have to win as many games as possible because one, you know, one shot, one bad call, whatever it is, could be the difference between a 2 and a 3, where you have to play one single elimination game, a 4 and a 5, where you have to play two. And for those four teams, you know, there's a good chance one of them will have a chance to grab a top two, and that'll be fascinating.
Is there anything about the season that has been, be it a player, be it a team, be it you know, a rotation decision, has there been anything that's been particularly surprising to you so far this year?
Among the surprises, you know, the Indiana Fever were dead last season. They've gone off to a 3-3 start, and the same thing with the Liberty. They were also in the tank last year. They've now ripped off 2 in a row. They're 2-4. So those two teams, just like if they're more competitive, that obviously makes the bottom much more interesting when it already is very competitive, just trying to make the playoffs. But as far as surprises go, with so many of those stars as mentioned being out, not to mention Brianna Stewart, the reigning MVP of Seattle, with all the injuries, the race at the bottom is also. There's also just a lot of uncertainty there. So I guess, you know, Indiana and New York make for good stories, you know, especially if all of your teams have a realistic shot of making the playoffs. That's obviously a nice thing to be able to sell.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. It leads into a lot. I mean, a lot of players coming back. I'm interesting you have. I know that there's players that'll leave for Europe in the middle of the season, which will kind of add some interesting wrinkles as well. But it's a great league. It's really fun to watch. Check out Ben on Locked On Women's Basketball and every place he writes, including High Post Hoops and the B-Ball Artist and the B-Ball Index. Ben, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.